is the rule a thumbs up from the microphone?
For these, really? I do about a fist.
A fist, okay.
A fist. Interesting. Hold on, let me get my... Am I turning up your headphones?
Keep speaking.
The quick brown fox jumped over the lazy dog. I think I'm turning up my headphones. Yeah.
I think your headphones are going up, yeah.
Okay, why are mine so quiet? Sorry, I also redid...
All of the... Oh, there we go. That's better.
It was my... See, I have an amplifier and a mixer. I'm not going to go over like what each thing does, but they both look exactly the same. So yeah. It's hard to... like, even though I have them labeled, it's just like, okay, which cord am I supposed to be...
which knob am I twisting?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sorry, and I just redid everything, so everything's kind of off. I don't have everything exactly... Okay, that's... That's where I want it. Oh,
that's better.
Crispy.
That's better. Crispy.
Anyway, speaking of like the whole fistful rule away from the microphone, you'll notice that the chairs don't have backs to them anymore.
Was that the intention? Because that's, people would...
Because every single episode, people like to lean back on the chair, which is fine. Like, that's the natural inclination.
Yeah.
No pun intended. That's the natural thing to do when you're in a chair with a back on it.
Yeah.
So it's understandable. But, so, like, I have zero problem with it. Like... while we're talking, but then it's like I go in and post and suddenly you'll be way quieter than me and I have to boost things and level things and it's like...
It's not fun.
And then I decide to just be the asshole here and take off the back of the chair. It's like, all right, you're going to have good posture on my podcast from now on.
Yeah.
None of this leaning back shit. We're going to get nice and close on the microphone and we're going to have a coherent conversation.
Yeah. Next time you should like bring like those like vests that people wear and like that like purposely like put your back straight. Like, this is how we're going to do the podcast.
I should get straight jackets for everyone. Aiden Tech, the last time I saw you was last summer, right?
Yeah, it was like in August.
Dude, it's weird how fast time flew by a little bit.
Especially, okay, wait. I've been having trouble saying the word especially.
Especially.
I've been saying especially for some reason. Okay, so especially this year for some reason. I don't know why I'm like done with like freshman year of college already. Like, I thought I started yesterday, like, honestly.
Yeah.
But I'm done.
How was that experience, by the way? Was it everything you expected to be? Expected it to be?
Yeah, for sure. In general, I knew the college I was going to get into and, like, financial, like, reasons. I wasn't going to be able to go to, like, a big school that had, like, a lot of people because I wouldn't be able to pay for it. And I didn't get any scholarships for that. So I was going to go to a college that was, like, more educational-based, which I was, like, down for. I'm like, I'm cool with that. In general, the college I had, for my experience, great education. Like, I couldn't take it back. Like,
that's
the teachers were great. I learned a lot of good stuff. Like, I'm positive and, like, excited for my next year and, like, connections I might be able to make. And it's, like, almost, like, certain. I have, like, a really good affirmation from, like, all the staff and faculty that you're going to have a career, like, after school. Like, you're not going to be like, oh, I'm done. What do I do now? They're like, we're getting you a job and you're not going to leave until you get a job. Like, it's like, for sure, you're going to like have a career. So I'm like, that's okay. Great to feel.
Let me play devil's advocate here.
All right.
What if that's what I'm sure they mean it. Like, yeah. You are a very talented person, but like deep down, it's just like, what if they say that to everyone to right? get you to keep paying for their college?
Exactly.
But I'm glad it's working out.
Yeah, very true. But I'm just going to like, I feel like they say, they could definitely say it to everyone that probably they do. But I would say it's the people that actually like take that opportunity and run with it. Then that's like the reason why they have it. Instead of people saying like, oh, I'm just going to get a job. I'm just going to do classes and sit back and not like actively like put myself in front of like my teachers or my staff and faculty. I'm not going to like go to the career center and like actively like search for jobs or like put resumes out in like the industry and business and like what I'm going to do. So in that facet, I think that's where they're going at.
Yeah. Oh yeah, for sure.
Then back on like my experience in college, it's definitely a weird experience this freshman year because my college doesn't really have like a campus.
What does that even mean?
So the campus
it's in the Matrix
are just buildings. You just got skyscrapers for like your campus. So there's no like green space.
Okay, so it's not like you're, you know, like when you imagine a college campus, it's not like your typical campus. It's like, it's almost like a city in itself.
Yeah, because the school is like in the loop. It's like right by Michigan Avenue. It's like across the street from like Millennium Park. And there's no like park you have. So like how they advertise college, colleges in Chicago, it's like, Chicago's your campus and whatnot. I'm just like, cool. Excited for it. And I took advantage of that. Like, I, like, used as much of Chicago as I possibly could.
Uh-huh.
But, like, when you went to class, you were just like, I'm in this building, that one, and I'm done.
And they're all, like, really tall buildings, too, right? Like, yeah. You have to find... I'm just imagining having to, like, take the elevator to each class.
Every class.
Is that what it is?
Every... Yeah.
Like...
And for me, I rode around on my little electric bike all the time.
Oh, yeah.
And it's nice. Foldable. And I was, I was able to like bring it inside every elevator, but sometimes it was like a dominant thing where I would like walk into a small elevator and like, you can't get in this elevator. It's me and my bike. So I would get like elevators to myself, which is really nice, but
that's great.
It was, yeah, that was like the one thing that was kind of annoying, just like swiveling around like little hallways with my bike.
Yeah.
But yeah, the classes were small and I only had one class every week. So I had So I never, first semester, I didn't have any classes on Monday. And then second semester, I didn't have any classes on Friday. And then for example, like my photography class only met every Monday from like 1 to 4:50 PM. So it was like a long class, but you only had once a week. That was the one thing I didn't like because I was expecting a bit more like class time with like students because it's kind of hard to make connections with students when you're already masked up distance and like you have to be like isolated in some sort of way. Oh shoot. No.
What?
Okay. Sidetracked.
All right. This is the side quest.
Side quest. Last podcast I did, I listened back to it.
Oh, you are a brave soul.
And I was like, what do I sound like first off and what can I fix? One thing I said, I didn't count, but I said it a lot. I said in some sort of way, and I just said it.
Oh, just like the phrase in some sort of way.
Yeah.
You know, like a lot of people have these phrases that they repeat, right? And, you know, like I'm trying to work on my ums, on my likes, on my, there's a million phrases I say that I'm trying to work on. You'd be surprised. You know, it's something that you notice yourself, and maybe it's something odd. Like if I just watched this comedy special with what's his name, Tom Segura.
Yeah,
he was kind of a hidden gem for me, even though he's super popular. Mm-hmm. Like I just never really checked him out, but he had this bit where he talks about how he'll just randomly yell bikes.
Yeah, bikes.
Bikes. It's just like unless it's something odd like that, like. You would be surprised by how little people notice because in regular conversations, people are always saying, that's just so typical.
Yeah.
And it annoys me when I go back
and
watch over it. And that is why I don't watch back my podcasts. Even when I'm editing, I found a way to to do it where I don't have to watch the whole thing. First of all, Just from a practicality standpoint, that saves so much time. You edit videos. You know how long it takes.
It does.
There's my See, now you got me thinking
some
about
sort
it.
Sort of way. I was like talking to myself on the way to this like podcast. I'm like, I'm not going to say that.
I'm not going to say it.
And then I said it.
Well, first of all, self-awareness is kind of just the first step to just fixing those habits, you know, like even if you do like continue those habits, at least you're catching yourself and you're at least self-aware of it.
Yeah.
is getting it out of the system right now.
Oh, by the way, I totally forgot. Can I offer you a water?
Offer me.
You already. Oh, I saw
I
you
have
brought
water,
your water.
But do you have anything else than water?
I have a single Mountain Dew in my fridge. I'm not gonna lie, I'm lacking. Were you expecting a G Fuel? Because I have to admit.
No, I don't know what I was expecting.
Okay, it's water and a Mountain Dew.
I might take a water before I leave.
Okay, for sure, for sure.
That's fair enough.
I just thought about it because I got thirsty.
Yeah. No problem. Anyways, back to college.
Yeah, absolutely. Back to college.
So classes were long, but you only have them once a week, and it was hard to make connections with people, like student-wise,
yeah,
in classes.
So was it just the one class that met once a week, or was it like all the classes, each class met once a week?
Yeah, each class.
Okay.
Met once a week.
I don't know why I imagined you just had a single class.
That makes sense on why you probably imagined that, yeah. So, in general, that was a bit difficult to make friendships based on just meeting once a week, because you'd be like, hey, I like your art. You look pretty cool. You're fun. See you next week. And you wouldn't talk until next week. And it was hard to build like a foundation to then like get their information and start texting and like meet up with them afterwards. Because a lot of people at the college were off campus. Like it's a very heavily like commuted school.
Yeah.
So a lot of people had to like work a lot to then pay rent or had like outside acquaintances that were like,
yeah,
cause them to not be available all the time. So that was kind of difficult to try to find even a friend group per se at college.
And I feel like people in Chicago would be a little more personable, but I know from my college experience, it was just like most classes, everyone was super awkward. Yep. There was zero communication, like, especially in my math class. My teacher, I think a lot of it does depend on the professor, because in my, which class was it? In my U.S. history, I had this very vibrant, very vocal, very, very, like, friendly, outgoing professor. Great professor.
Yeah.
And because he treated his classroom kind of like a dialogue, he heavily involved the students. He let the students like speak out whenever they wanted to. It was a very high energy classroom, and people would actually talk to each other in that classroom.
Yeah.
My math teacher,
opposite.
My math professor for college algebra, the whole time I can't even do a proper impression of him, but the whole time he would just talk like this, even more boring than that. Like at least that guy, that impression sounded like a little cool, but. He would just talk like X plus Y equals something about math. I don't remember math. Imagine going to college.
Imagine.
But he would ask the classroom a question, and not as
even
in those situations, no one would speak.
Yeah.
So you just the whole class is just silent the whole time. You can tell everyone's dreading life.
Yep.
But then you walk into U.S. history, and it's like, I'm here to have fun.
Exactly.
It's gonna be a good time. I'm gonna meet the person next to me. How are you?
Yeah. It's 100% the professor, because I had classes, for example, I'll take two classes, for example. So my editing one class that I had last semester was great. That class, I actually made a friend group in. Like everyone, like the whole class felt like a big friend group. It was really nice. You would walk in the class and everyone was like, yo, what movie did you watch this past week? We always like talk about movies and like our favorite directors or like past movies that we watched and like analyzing stuff. It was just like a good time. Like you were in a group of people that were like had the same interest as you, and it was fun. And even the teacher was like the sweet old lady that would just like talk about like, yeah, I had a party with Elton John the other day. I was like, what do
holy
you mean?
Shit,
like,
Elton John?
It was nuts. Like Lady Gaga name drops. Like I was like, who are you? Like it was nuts.
And you're teaching my class?
Yeah. I was like, this is insane. And so like that class in general was great. We made a great friend group over it. We have a group chat. We just like interact with each other all the time. Asian Journeys class, I took it because I was like, oh, I'm like fascinated with the culture in general.
You're welcome.
And yep, thank you. And sorry. Got
Asian
me there. It's a humanities class. So it was like a credit that I needed to take. And there was like so many different classes, and I thought like, oh, Asian Journeys might be interesting in some sort of way. Oh, I did it again. No.
Oh, in some sort of way. Seriously, the more you acknowledge it, the more people are going to notice.
I was on a hot streak of not saying it for a while. Anyways, I'm just going to get back to it. This class, you felt like the teacher was your mother, and the class was like, had to be silent, or if you spoke up, it was like, danger.
Yeah. Elementary and middle school. I'm not gonna say her name, but the lady who always went, shh,
yes,
yeah, is that exactly
Mrs.
what it was like?
Do you want me to say that?
No, we don't need to out her like
the,
that.
Play the fiddle.
I'll tell you what, she was killer on that fiddle.
But blame
she
you.
Did not let us talk even a little bit.
Nope. But even when there was parts of the discussion where she was inviting the class to like answer questions or to give their point of view, it was just so silent. And then she would like, on like the slightest movement of someone's face that would like their eyebrows would raise or their eyes would like close for a little longer than a blink. She'd be like, are you mad at me? She would overanalyze everything in class. And I was...
She just seemed to take every little thing personally
personally. And I was... It was frustrating. And then for my final project, she wanted to talk one-on-one with me just to like go over like what I had. Cause I gave her a whole bunch of like information to like, I did a lot of like pre-production on it. I did like a shot list, a script. And then I had like quotes and information that I was going to like apply to the video. Mm-hmm. And she was like, whoa, you're doing too much for this project. And I was just like,
you're doing too much work.
I'm like, what do you mean? This is how I do a video. And then I was like, she was explaining to me, like, do you always reference your teachers and their last name? I'm like, yeah. It's like, Mr. Ott, Mr. Stockton.
Yeah, like that's a normal thing to do.
And she's like, for future reference, you don't mention your teacher with their last name. You do professor or what is in the syllabus. I'm like, okay, this is like the last week of the semester. I don't know why you're bringing this up to me now.
Yeah.
So just like waste the first 10 minutes explaining to me how to like properly send an email to a teacher or professor. And I'm like, okay. And then she's like, what's the attitude? I'm like, what do you mean? I just said, okay, let's talk about my final, please. I don't got time. So that was fun. And then that's the classes. And I was living with my grandparents in Chicago. So that was nice. To an extent. I got fed, so I didn't have to worry about like food. I was like housed, so I didn't have to worry about like paying for rent or anything, which was really nice. But it kind of got a little mundane.
Yeah.
There and there.
Old people are pretty mundane.
Yeah. So it was a great experience. It was really nice to like get to know my grandparents a bit more because all I've known of them was like from like holidays.
Uh-huh.
So I didn't like...
You exist and you're not dead yet.
Yeah, exactly. I didn't know them. But like I got to like know them this year.
Yeah.
So that was nice. I really appreciate them offering to just like let me be in their apartment for like a year.
Oh yeah, for sure. Especially in Chicago.
Like I know like
just the cost of living there is absurd.
Yeah.
How much was just like, did you have to spend a whole lot on feeding yourself or was,
no.
Did your grandparents take care of that?
They took care of it.
Hey,
so
grandparents
the funny
for the win.
Thing about like food in general. I got really lucky for
food
this
is
first
pretty
year.
Funny.
Yeah. It's so funny. They made a movie about it, right? Sausage Party. That's hilarious.
That's probably the funniest food.
Right? Oh gosh, hilarious.
I was trying to think of where you were going with that. I totally forgot Sausage
Party
existed.
Yeah. Seth Rogen, what a guy.
Anyway, as you were saying.
So in high school, they gave everyone EBT cards, like food stamps. I barely used any of it over the summer. And because I was in Michigan for camp and I didn't need to buy food. So I was like, okay, I'm just going to save it. And I was like, oh, wait, I have this. So I was like, first week in college, I was like, okay, let me check how much money this had. It had $900 on it.
What the fuck?
So.
That's not what I got.
Parents, grandparents, they're going to feed me food, like dinner, occasionally, all the time. I can't use this EBT card for like restaurants, but I can use it for grocery stores.
Mm-hmm.
And there's like a grocery store on like every corner in Chicago. So no problem. If I needed a snack, I could get one. I milked that $900 the entire year. I have $1 left on it. And I am so surprised that it like lasted me. So like next year, I'm going to miss my EBT card.
Oh, yeah, for sure. I miss it. I remember when everyone was getting those and I got mine, I think after graduation when it showed up in the mail. And it was, I think it was like 300 some bucks.
Yeah.
A little surprised by your 900.
Yeah.
So I'm going to have to sue or something. Like I want my 600. Where's the last 600 of this?
Because mine started off at 300 as well, but it like,
they like added to
added to it. So I was like, thank you. Yeah. I won't complain.
In all fairness, I didn't really use mine much either. No. I remember I spent the last 50 bucks on G Fuel.
Yeah, I don't blame you. It was really fun because whenever like people would like get together and they would like, oh, who needs food or whatever? I'm like, I got you guys. No problem.
Pick the most expensive steak.
Yeah, I got you.
That's what my brother would do when he got like a link card. He would just go to the store and buy like expensive steaks.
Yeah, and I realized that on the food stamps, they would take the tax off. So it's just like what you would pay. Mm-hmm. So like what it says on like the tag or whatever the food is like purchased at. That's like what you buy. There's no tax on it. So that was really nice. I figured out that that's why I wasn't like spending so much.
Yeah.
But yeah.
I'm trying to move to a state with no sales tax, like Oregon or something.
Mm-hmm. Especially so like Illinois is the worst state. For tax,
just don't even add that in. Just the worst state.
It is the worst.
Maybe not the worst.
It's up there.
Because at least we're not racist. That racist.
Chicago helps us.
Yeah, it's like you forget how rural Illinois is. Yeah. Like you imagine Illinois, and it's like, oh, it's all Chicago.
No, like, it's a flower state.
Oh yeah, yeah, for sure. Like you go to Chicago and then you leave and then of course there's like, you know, there's Rockford and then you leave even further and corn forever.
Yeah, corn. Lots of corn.
Lots of corn. I told this joke on stream once where someone was like, oh, I'm from the South. Our favorite things are apricots and something else. I don't know.
Yeah.
But then I go in out. Yeah, I'm from the Midwest. Our favorite things are corn and Kanye West. Kanye West.
Yeah.
Corn.
That's so, our favorite.
So, like, what was I going to ask here? So, what were kind of your expectations going into college? I'm sure we talked about it extensively in the last podcast, but probably, as I went over, I don't watch back my podcasts, yeah. But like, so was it like better than you expected, kind of worse than what you expected, maybe a mix of both?
Mm-hmm. Education, I would say, was on par with what I expected.
Mm-hmm. Can I ask how much you paid to go to that college?
Yeah, so scholarships helped a lot. So I'm only paying like $5,000 a year.
Oh, that's actually not bad at all.
Yeah. It's like really good. And I got a couple other scholarships throughout this year. So it's like down to 4,000.
Oh, think. Yeah. That is really good, actually. Because yeah. I don't know. Other people are telling me they're paying like $10,000, $15,000. How much is Isaac paying?
$40 a year. Holy shit.
I think that's what Darian told me he was paying up there with like the $30,000, $40,000. He's not even going to like it's far out school is just Rockford University, which good for him. I think it's working out for him. Right. But it's also like,
honestly, the other thing that's funny is that in-state tuition is more expensive than out-of-state tuition in like Wisconsin.
Really?
Yeah. You can go to like a Wisconsin school and pay $10,000 a year out-of-state.
But if you go to Illinois, you can still end up paying $20,000, $30,000.
Yeah. If I didn't get any scholarships for the school, I would be paying around, yeah, close to 30, like 28 a year.
Okay, gotcha. So it is really the scholarships that are carrying that.
100%, yes.
Yeah, I remember my mom was pushing me really hard to look into scholarships when she was like, when she was still begging me to go to college and not drop out to become a YouTuber.
No, I trust in you.
You got this. Full faith. It's nice now because I've been doing it for a year and it's finally starting to show.
Pick up.
Yeah, it's like really starting to to finally pick up, and mm-hmm. It has like the outcome is a little more tangible than before.
For sure. You have like a community now on Discord, yeah. That like
it's weird having right? fans
and like art.
Yeah. Right? I remember getting my first fan art, and it was just like, this person knows my face and drew it, and I have no idea what they look right? like.
Yeah.
And it's really endearing. It's probably like seeing that was kind of the coolest thing ever.
I bet, yeah.
Yeah. So I'm nothing but appreciative for everyone who 100%. Follows and is involved with community, and it's just really cool to see, and it feels awesome even just at 300 subscribers. Yeah. So it just has me thinking, oh, what's it going to be like at 1,000, 100,000, a million,
right? Oh, well, nuts.
We're aiming for 50 million. I think that's the goal.
Oh, yeah. 100%.
I think if I can hit 50 million,
I'm satisfied.
It's like, all right, I don't need any more people.
50 million by 50 years old.
Yeah. You know, I just think with the amount that the human population increases by, I feel like I have to inherently hit that. In 100 years, we'll probably have like 100 billion people. So that's gonna be like not even a fraction of a percent of the population.
Are we at 10 billion now for world population?
Last I checked, we were at 7.7.
5
billion ish, but that was years ago. That was back when I was in college. We can look this up now. Look at this fancy
stuff. While I look it up, I can get back to expectations.
Yeah,
in general, as like I said, education was baseline what I expected. Okay,
we haven't increased by that much actually.
For some reason, I thought we were at 10. I was like, yo,
I say not that much, but we added another like, half a billion people in the last. Yeah, because the last I remember was like 7.25 or maybe just over 7. So we're closing in on 8 billion.
We're closing.
That's so many people.
There's a lot of people.
Like, apparently, and here's the interesting thing.
Whoa.
You can take all those people and put them in the Grand Canyon, and it still won't fill it up.
Yep.
Not even like a little bit.
We got a fat canyon in our canyon. We got a fat one.
We got a big old canyon.
Big old canyon.
Yeah. This is you don't watch Rick and Morty at all, do you?
No, I haven't. No. I really want to though.
The new season was kinda ass, but they have this funny joke in there where they basically just refer to the Grand Canyon as America's pussy. They have a joke where all like Morty somehow like I don't want. It's so gross. It's such a gross episode, but like,
I bet.
But like somehow, like an experiment goes wrong and Morty's sperm like comes to life and they're just like these giant man-eating things. Okay. It's basically like giant worms going around eating whatever. And the joke was that they're all trying to get to the Grand Canyon.
We got to make up more Mortys.
More Mortys.
Imagine the baby that would come out of the Grand Canyon.
Dude, you don't want. There was a baby that came out of that episode.
Oh, there was?
I won't spoil it for you.
Okay.
It's a terrible episode and kind of a terrible season, but I thought it was a little clever how they played that out.
That's funny.
But yeah, so I know you're into Spikeball a lot. So how was your Spikeball game over the course of school?
Yeah, I was going to get into that as well. Into like the social aspect of like college.
Mm-hmm.
I was expecting a bit more friends that would populate from classes, but that didn't happen. Mainly because I wasn't on campus or whatever they called campus, like behind the buildings or whatever. I instead was really excited about Spikeball because that's where Spikeball originated, in Chicago. So I was like, all right, there better be some like hot pockets somewhere in this like city. So first or second week, I can't remember exactly how early it was, but it was early. Like I got there, I'm like, I'm playing Spikeball first thing. I put out a pickup game in an area, and I got some people to come. So it's like, sweet. In general, I made more friends with like 30-year-old accountants that would play Spikeball with me than like college kids that would do film.
That's incredible.
I created like a really good like Spikeball base in the downtown Chicago because there apparently there's like no spike ball scene in downtown Chicago, which is odd.
Yeah.
It's all in the suburbs, which I was like, oh, that kind of makes sense.
That does kind of make sense.
Because then there's like bigger areas. It's a bit more quiet. You have like turf fields for when the winter rolls around.
Mm-hmm.
In general, let me think. So in October, I went, right? Was it October? No, September. September, I had a Chicago tournament that I played at, got first place for intermediate.
Congrats.
And then me and my partner
said
like,
that so weakly. That was a weak ass congrats. Sorry.
Congrats.
I don't know how it came out that way. Sorry. Allow me to redo that. Congrats.
Thank you. And then me and my partner were like, all right, we just won first place in an intermediate tournament. Let's go to advance. And the next tournament that we had like lined up was nationals.
Oh.
So we're like, let's drive to, it was Pennsylvania that we drove to. Great drive, great experience. Played advanced, got, I think, 33rd out of like 80 teams first time. We dominated the pool play. We didn't lose once in the pool play. And then like the first team we played, they like woke up or something and they started to just like beat us. I was like, can't do anything about this. Yeah. But it was really cool to see like all the like the woman round net player pros like go crazy and all like the male premier pros like go crazy as well. It was a really cool experience to like just see like the spikeball community that you love so much just like all in one space. Just it was like a bro fest, and like it was amazing. It was great. Besides like losing.
But hey, that's like nationals, right?
Nationals,
so
yeah.
33 out of, you said like 80. That's not bad.
It was, I would take it. And then after that, it was sort of like the off season, because after nationals is like, okay, winter's gonna roll around. What can you do? You can't do anything really. I took pictures for a tournament. Well, I started to take pictures for like a Chicago round net. There's someone that hosts like college sectionals in like the Midwest area, and I was like trying to play, but I needed to be a part of a college that had a spikeball team. And I was like, all right, just me and my partner, can we just play? And they're like, no. I was like, is there any way I can come at least? And he's like, we need volunteers. So I was like, okay, yeah, I can come volunteer. And I'm like, oh, I also take pictures. I can just take pictures and like give them to you. After the tournament, I took pictures. I like edited, I don't know, like 200 pictures, and I sent them off. And he's like, yo, these are pretty sick. I can pay you for these. And I was like, sure.
Oh, check
it out. So I got like $200 from that whole like little session. And then he contacted me again in the winter saying, hey, I'm like doing more tournaments. You want to take pictures again? I was like, sure, I'll definitely take pictures, because who doesn't want to go to a spikeball tournament and just take pictures? Like me? Yeah, all the time.
Of course.
So I went to an indoor tournament in, I think it was March. Took pictures for that, $200 again.
Mm-hmm.
And then from that point, I made more connections with a bit more of like premier players. So like these are like a bit more of the pros, like people that actually like take this seriously. And they play at that same indoor facility like every Friday morning. I was like, sweet, I don't have classes Friday. I'll come over there and it'll work. So what I would have to do is I would have to wake up at 6 a.m. to then get on the Metra, take an hour train ride to Barrington, and then bike 30 minutes through like cornfields or something like that to then get to like the spikeball facility at like 8 a.m. play there until like 4, and that was probably the best spikeball I've ever played.
Like, yeah, because you're playing with pros, right?
They're like, they're telling me all these like very small details that I would never like realize, like all the new rules that come up, and they're like, oh, you got to play like this, you got to defend like this, you got to hit like this. I was like, yo, this is nuts. Mm-hmm. While I was playing with them, they were saying like, yo, you're actually pretty decent. You should be like playing in contender. Like contender is like the next step up from like pro pretty much.
Oh.
So it's like, are you joking? Like, there's no way. Like, no, yeah. Cause most people that are in like advanced don't have like the footwork that you do to like advance. But since I'm a soccer player, like it's ingrained in my legs to like have good footwork. So I was able to compete with the pros at practice with them, and it was fun. I haven't like gone off yet and played with them, but my partner, I haven't been able to play with him much, and I've been able to get a couple of games like here and there for like the past month.
Mm-hmm.
But just going and playing with the pros and just taking that trek all the time back and forth from like downtown to Barrington was like probably the best experience I've had for like spike ball in general.
I'm sure. Because you're not playing with losers like me and all of our other friends.
You guys aren't losers.
Okay, but we're definitely not pros. I think what I'm getting at here is that like it's a whole different experience, you know. Like I would say you've definitely surpassed any like as far as people we know around here. Yeah. You've definitely just being completely honest, you're way better than anyone else we know.
Yeah.
So I'm sure it was a really cool experience to finally have some other people who can really like push what you're capable of and help you improve. Because just playing with, and this goes for anything, just playing with other people who are like lower than your level, you're not going to improve basically at all with them. Yeah. I'm like, it can be fun. Like we can, even though we know we can't beat you, we can still talk some shit.
Yeah.
But to really improve, and if you really want to hone your skill, you gotta be playing with people who are even higher above your level, people who will beat you however often you can handle that defeat, whether that's like whether you're losing 40% of the time, 50% of the time, 100% of the time, maybe not 100% of the time.
Yeah.
But you want to be working with people who will push your limits.
Exactly. So, throughout like the past few years of playing intermediate, that's sort of what I had. I was able to get myself to a position to where I could win the tournament. Uh-huh. And then after that, I got it to advance, and then people were still pushing me. But like the accountants I've been playing with in like the downtown area, not really
easy.
Yeah, we were like all in the same level, so we never like pushed each other or like improved. We would have like fun like rallies. It was a good time. Like overall, I play spike ball not to like have it as like a main sport. I just have it as like a community kind of like social aspect or like friendship kind of way to like build community. But to like play with the pros, it was like, oh yeah, this is definitely something I want to like stick with and improve.
And you hadn't played with anyone at that level before, had you?
No, so that was my first time playing with them. And also, like, spike ball comes out with new rules every year. So the game went from, just give you an idea, how you used to play spike ball was you had the net, and then around was a 6-foot serving circle. Uh-huh. And you couldn't step in that serving circle to, like, hit the ball on the net, right?
Yeah.
Now, there's a 7-foot serving circle and a 1-foot no hit zone like right by the net, and that 1-foot no hit zone is you can't step in that zone when you're hitting the ball on the net, which makes a big difference in general, because a lot of people saw the ability to get right under the net and hit the ball between their legs or like around their hip, and it was like really hard to like counter that. So what they did is they put people farther back from the net, so then when they hit it, they can't hit it like between their legs or anything like that.
Yeah, stuff like that is a lot harder to pull off.
Yeah, and then once you hit the ball, you can't like step in that zone. You have to like dodge it completely. So in general, that made it a lot more difficult. And then the serving height, so like if you hit the ball and it goes above their head, that was like a bad serve.
Uh-huh.
But now if it goes above their shoulder, it's a bad serve. So the serves are nerfed and they have to stay lower, and then even hitting is nerfed and you have to like stay out of a circle. So like it's changing quite a bit all the time.
Yeah.
And trying to conform to these new rules is definitely different. And sometimes those rules come out and they don't stick. They like go away after a year. So sometimes people that aren't pros, they don't play with it. So then if they do stick around for a while, the pros have been playing with it for a while, and then you're like, oh, I should start playing with this. And then you like play with the pros and you're like, oh, this is your first time playing with this? I'm like, yeah, I just been doing it like how we've, like my house rules for like the past year.
Yeah.
So when I went with the pros, I have never played with the no hit zone. And I was playing with it and it's like, is this your first time playing with the no hit zone? I was like, yeah, this is my first time. I'm like, you're joking. And it's because of my footwork, I was able to like dance around the circle and be okay. But yeah, that's the fun thing about the sport, is because it constantly changes every year. It's never stagnant.
Yeah, I have to admit, I don't know if I would put up with a sport like that. It's like, what if they change the rules of chess every year? The pawns no longer move one space. You can move them across the board.
Right.
the queen, we're just going to nerf it. She's the new pawn. Yeah.
And it's mainly like serves are mainly changing because people are able to put so much spin on the ball that it just like hits the net and like goes in any direction. And you can't like really predict what's going to happen. The only way you can predict is on how their elbow is. If their elbow is high, it's going to go far left. If it's low, it's going to go far right. But you have to figure out
technical.
You have to like watch their elbow, then watch the ball hit off the net, and then like put your hand in a spot that would like get it up. And then you have to move your body at the same time. It's nuts. And at the same time, when you hit that ball, you have to set it to your teammate.
Yeah.
You have to like pass the ball in that split second. It's nuts.
See, I have a decently athletic build, and if I like put some work into myself, I'm sure I could be decent at sports, but that's the part of sports that I could never like get the hang of. There's so many, especially if you want to be good, there's small technical things that you have to be aware of on top of the other million things that you have to be watching. Mm-hmm. And then you have to translate all of these thoughts into a specific action.
Yep.
And then like nuts. Just stuff like that. Like I was ass at volleyball in high school. I don't think I ever got like a good spike in just because like you have to like spiking not too bad. Like you have to watch for the arc of the volleyball and like you have to think about your timing. Typically if you're going for a spike from outside, you want to be running up at it once it reaches the peak of its height. Mm-hmm. But then you also have to like try to catch it while your hand is at its highest point too. Yeah. And then you got to give it the little flick of the wrist, and it's just like stuff like that. I don't have that kind of focus where I can just sit there and do math in my head. I mean, it's not really doing math, but
I know what you mean. Yeah,
but there's just so much to it, so I'm always impressed by stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
You remember that fight night that we had in I think it was junior year?
Yeah, it's still on my channel, the video.
Oh really?
It's not public, it's private, because I remember Nasser saying don't post a
yeah,
public, because someone's gonna get it. I'm gonna get grounded for life or something.
Okay, but everyone already saw it live. Yeah. There's some 200 people who watched that.
It's like whatever, Nasser. Yeah. I'll respect your wishes though.
But yeah, that was such a humbling experience because you know you look at people throwing punches and it's like, oh yeah, I can throw a punch. No, you step in there. And you have to watch your opponent. You have to watch their hand position. And punches are fast, but even as quick as they are, you have to like, you know, watch their elbow, watch where their hand's going to go, and then you have to decide. Oh, am I going to just take this? Am I going to block it? Am I going to step to the side? What are you going to do? There's so many things, even in you know what seems to be a simple sport like boxing. Yeah, it's just like stuff like that. You have to really respect the people who go hard at it because mm-hmm. it's not as simple as it looks on the surface.
I bet. Yeah, that is nuts. Yeah, in general, sports, any athlete, just bravo.
Honestly,
like you guys are nuts.
I wish I could be good at sports. I wish I could say, yeah, I was the shit in volleyball. It's like, okay, improve it. Like, yeah, I will sit down on this one. I love volleyball. I love playing volleyball. Mm-hmm. And but it's like, don't you probably shouldn't put me in a tournament or anything.
Mm-hmm. And then Isaac brought to my attention that I have this thing called kinesthetic intelligence. Probably people watching this or listening to this are probably annoyed of me saying kinesthetic intelligence because
big words.
I've said it quite a few times and everyone's like, yeah, I know tech has kinesthetic intelligence.
Kinesthetic intelligence.
To give you a definition, it's like instead of like being smart muscle-wise in like your brain to like do like math or kind of like book stuff,
mm-hmm.
it's all like motor movements.
Mm-hmm.
So I can not play soccer for a year and then get right back to it in a week and I'll be like be able to play a game right mm-hmm. away, where some people if they play soccer for a year and then they take a break for a year, they can't like get right back into it. Mm-hmm. They have to like take a while. So I can just pick up things really quick that are physical, and it's kind of a cheat code, I would say.
Yeah.
For sports.
Yeah. So something you don't really think about is how much like focus you need to even just function your own body. I mean, yeah. I can raise my right eyebrow on its own. Kind of, but left, it's not going anywhere.
Nope.
Like,
can't do it either.
But if you focus really hard, still can't do it.
But I know what you mean.
Yeah. And so, like, fine, especially once you get into like finer motor movements, yeah. is like, it requires a lot of focus. That's mm-hmm. something I learned when I first started working out, is it's better to, while you're lifting the weights, you know, to focus on the muscle that you're trying to work out, because yeah. you'll actually get a better, it'll just be a better workout if you can focus on that muscle and focus on, yeah just focus on it.
Like, I, like, the same to that. I know one thing that helps focusing is, like, you, someone, like, if you have a gym bro or a gym buddy that goes with you, you can, like, if you're doing, like, a pec workout, they should, like, touch the part where the muscle should be contracting, and that, mm-hmm. like, helps you focus on it a lot more. I don't know the exact term that's used for, like, touching that muscle and, like, feeling that contraction, but it helps. Like,
I'm sure. Yeah. I'm sure. My mom is my gym bro.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. Anytime I go to the gym, I bring her with.
Oh, that's sweet.
Yeah. No, it's awesome. And she keeps up with everything I do.
Nice.
I mean, she's not doing the weight that I'm doing, but whatever workout I'm doing, I'm just like, all right, we're going to bench press today.
Yeah.
We're going to bench press a lot. She's like, okay. Like, she'll just be doing, like, even as low as just the bar itself, and
yeah.
like, that's fine.
Anything.
I'm just, yeah, mm-hmm. I'm not gonna flex or anything. No, again, no pun intended, yeah. but, like, I'll throw on a couple plates on there, yeah. but it's just really cool mm-hmm. getting to work out with my mom. Like, yeah. I've gone with other people, like Miles. the first time I went to work out with Miles, he hurt himself.
Oh no.
we were deadlifting, which in hindsight I probably shouldn't have started him out with.
No.
I told him to take it easy, don't hurt yourself. I was deadlifting, it was like 175, I think. Mm-hmm. You know, I lift more than that now, but at the nice, time, yeah. 175. This man has not been to a gym in a year ish. So I'm like, you know, you should probably start out at, like, you know, maybe 100. We can add more if you need it.
Yeah.
He's like, no, I got this. First one, he lifts it up. He does get it up.
Okay.
But then it's immediately like, oh shit, something hurts.
Oh no.
It's like, deadlifting's a bad one
to start with,
like, that one's one where if you don't do it right, that can really mess you up.
Yeah.
The back muscles, you got to be really careful with those. Mm-hmm. So in hindsight, I probably should have saved deadlifting for later, second yeah. or third day. I probably should have stepped in and been like, no, you are not doing that weight for your first lift. Yeah. You can try it out after you do 150, but
yeah,
I had too much faith in Miles.
Oh yeah,
Miles, if you are listening, like, I'm not trying to shit on you or anything. It was just like a funny thing. But I'll tell you what, we still went to the gym. Nice. Like, not a ton. I mostly went with my mom, but still pretty consistently after yeah. that. He did have to take a break to get that sorted out.
Yeah, was it his back that hurt, or
I'm trying to remember what it was exactly. I have to bring him on to tell the story yeah. because I don't want to.
You want to call him right now?
No, I actually talked to him. He said he was going to be busy today, hanging out with his lady friend.
His girlfriend, yeah.
yeah. So I don't want to interrupt that. Just to ask him, hey, remember when you hurt yourself? Can you just out yourself real quick? What happened with yeah. that? So I'll have him tell the story next time I bring him on. But
yeah, don't want to interrupt him.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, for sure. I've recently tried to been like kind of like a good wingman even to strangers.
Oh, yeah.
I remember at Culver's, so I was working the drive-thru one day, and I saw this local tattoo artist. He works at Delicious Ink. Oh, yeah. I recognize him because I follow a bunch of tattoo artists on
Instagram
now, especially local people, because it's like, oh, what if I want a tattoo from them? Like, I want to see their work, see if, like, filter out who could do what tattoo for me.
Yeah,
this guy's super talented, and I saw that he had a lady in the car with him. So I was already considering on bringing up like, oh, hey, you work at Delicious Inc., right? But as soon as I saw the girl, I was like, I got to do this man a favor.
Yeah.
Like, hey, man, you work at Delicious Inc., right? Oh, yeah. And I'm like, yeah, I really like your work. Keep it up. And then just like, I had to make sure that the girl saw that.
And he's like, all right, I see you.
All right. Like, you just got to do small favors like that for people. Like, oh.
And it probably made his day too.
Yeah, for sure. Like, it's super endearing. I've gotten recognized once.
Oh, you have?
Yeah, I think it was just like, he said he followed me on Snapchat. I'm not going to lie. Like, I didn't recognize him at all.
Oh, Snapchat.
So, yeah, so I don't know how I had him on Snapchat, but he said he watched me stream from time to time. I was like, oh, okay. Here I am just doing the windows at Culver's.
Saint Zesty.
Saint Zesty. Whoa, do you stream? It's like, so I'm stuff like that is just like, it is endearing.
It is. Yeah.
It is nice. I have to watch myself a little bit because it's like, I can't, like, I can appreciate it, but I have to admit, I do let it get to my head a little bit.
You're like, everyone must notice me now.
Everyone must bow to me.
Yeah. I had like a little thing like that in high school at Auburn where I would make skits for like night vision all the time.
Yeah.
Because no one else was like really putting out creative work. They were putting out like simple like food reviews or like how to bake food or whatever. I'm like, let me do something else.
Are you dissing on man Owen?
No. Not Owen. He was the one that started and he had good content.
Yeah, Owen actually had had good content. I just said that because he brought up food reviews.
Yeah, he had the best food reviews. And then me, Nat, Jake, and Sebastian, we made like cooking videos to like not do food review, but like a cooking thing, and it was like a little bit more elaborate. And then senior year, I was just making videos for night vision. And sometimes I was in the hall and a teacher I wouldn't have would be like, oh, you're the dude on night vision. I'm just like, do I know you? And I'm like, no. But it was like those little recognitions I definitely get from like people I didn't know at my school were just like, oh yeah, that was a cool video you made. I'm like, no, thanks.
Yeah. Yeah, it is super nice. You just have to be careful about like, you have to know your limits, because if you let something like that get to your head, you're gonna think, oh, I can do something way cooler than what I actually can, or maybe you get complacent with your work. And I have to admit, for like a good week, for a good week, I took it real easy with what I did, because it was just like a good week where like I was getting a lot of views. People were really responding to what I was doing. And I was just like, no, you gotta step back and realize, oh, you're not that cool.
I'm not there yet, but I'm working for it. Uh-huh. Yeah, for sure.
So by the way, speaking of really cool, I saw that post you had on your Instagram with like all the photos you took for our final project, right?
Bike.
Yeah, it was just really cool to see how, like, because those were like, you know, there's photos and then there's like photos. And it's just really cool to see like these newer photos, how good they were. Just seeing. Because I've known you since you started out like getting into photography, and it was really cool just to see, oh, this is what he can do now.
Mm-hmm.
So
it's fun. Yeah.
Yeah.
I remember you were definitely like, so the first time I started taking pictures was at Sugar River.
Oh, that was like the very first
time. That was the first time I took pictures with that camera.
Okay.
Because the camera I had was from Mr. Owen. He just gave me a camera and he's like, no one else is going to get a camera. You just can keep it for however long you need it. It's like, sweet. And I remember you were part of like my first batch of first photos ever. Well, like not like in my lifetime, but like serious, like taking that kind of seriously. And the progression I've seen is quite insane. Like from camp was like a big boost, because I was fully enveloped in photography. Like all I did and all I focused on at camp for like 3 months was photos. So I learned how to use a camera. I learned all like the tricks and like long exposures. I learned how to properly edit photos. It was like a great experience. And then this past semester, I had photography class because that's my minor. And it was really, they didn't really teach you more like things about the camera, because there's not too much to like dive into after you like sort of learned what like all the buttons and
yeah, there's knobs, only so many settings to go through.
Yeah, so it's not like it's an like a textbook of things you have to go through. So it was just like a little review, and then it was more of like showing you different genres and like pushing yourself outside of your comfort zone, getting different kinds of photos, like, or trying to focus on how you're taking the photo, like what's in your frame,
more on the technique rather than the device you have itself.
Exactly.
That can only get you so far.
Yeah. So, and learning that skill was really beneficial, because then it makes any camera you have the best camera you have.
Yeah.
So you don't have to have like a sick like Sony A7 or like a nice Canon 5D with like a nice like 25 millimeter prime lens to get any like banger photo. You could have like a disposable camera and you can get the same exact photo that you want. The quality might not be there, but the composition and like the art behind that photo is probably way more valuable. And then back onto the bike project, for our final, we had to pick something we were passionate about. And I've been biking all the time in Chicago. That's like my main mode of transportation. Mm-hmm. So I was like, I'm biking all the time. Why not just take pictures of it? So there was like three series of like photos, I guess, in that post that I made. And I printed them all out into like, I think it was 13 by 19, like big pieces of paper. It was really cool to like see like pictures printed out that you take. But there's three names for each project. It was called Fun in the Dark, which was a long exposures with lights on my bike. Here in Rockford, it was like the first time. It was like during spring break. I was like, okay, let's mess around with this idea. Second one was like a journey home. So it's me usually taking the Metro back to Rockford, because I would take the Metro back to Rockford a little bit more than I expected. So it was me like starting from downtown to like the train to then Harvard, which is like the farthest the train can go, and then my mom can pick me up. And then the last one was City Spokes, which is just like other people on bikes in Chicago. And that was like a quick ride. I started from one side of Lakeshore Drive to the other, and my electric bike has cruise control. So it's a cheap bike, and I don't know how it has this ability, but you just put on full throttle, you press it, and you like, once you learn no hands, you can just sit there with your camera and just like take pictures.
Bruh.
And it was like quick 10 minutes. I got photos and I was like, okay, this works. And I just slapped it on and everyone was like, yo, this is sick. And I was like, really? This is really that cool. And I felt really good about the photos I made, and the project I made, I felt really passionate about. And in that class, I was the only one that made a project that was somewhat a bit more cheery. Everyone else, there's like three people that made it on like mental health. I was like, I feel you. I understand, but gosh, I'm sorry for like, this is all you like think about.
But it
felt good to then make something that was joyous and like cheery, and have those people, like I saw them visibly smile, like when they saw my pictures. And then when we were going around critiquing, they were like, I'm so glad that you make something so joyous, because we kind of need this kind of like joy.
Yeah.
So it was really nice to see my art have some kind of emotional impact that I was like going for. I'm like, I wish people can like get a bit more joy.
With art, you know, it's so common to see those negative emotions, whether it's anger, sadness, you name it. Like, those are such powerful emotions that they are like, I would argue easier to convey into a form of art, like photography. I mean, you just get some like really dreary, angry shadows, put it in black and white.
Yeah, just contrast the heck out of the picture. Yep. Black and white, easy. Or just in general, street photography can be done like that. You just put it black and white, and people on the street, they're not smiling all the time. They're just like walking, and that can be conceived as something like negative.
Yeah.
So.
But like, I would say that happier emotions like joy, like, you know, you can easily take a picture of someone smiling, nice enough, but how do you like make them really feel that through the photo?
Yeah.
And like, you were just doing bikes, so you know, maybe you got someone smiling on their bike. It's like, but that's like, to convey that
that happy, that joyful emotion of through a picture of just an object is truly remarkable.
Yeah,
I would say.
I felt really good. And my teacher was like, you should just like send these to like that bike company or whatever. It's called Jetson. And then like, these are definitely marketable. I'm just like, okay. So I'm gonna send the pictures to them. I don't know if they're really going to understand the whole layout thing, but I'm going to see if they respond.
Yeah, I mean, it's always good to at least take the shot, because worst that can happen is nothing.
Exactly. So, but yeah, that was, yeah.
Really, do you ever look on your older photos and just look at it like, oh, this is straight bullshit. Why did I think that this was ever good?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's
quite often.
That's how I feel about basically just every single video I've made up to this point.
Yeah.
Like, kind of going back to that ego thing, like back when I first started out, you know, I'd been making videos for a fair amount. So, but it was all self-taught. And it's like, and I knew like the technical aspects. Like, I was capable of editing a video. Mm-hmm. So, like, I would put together those videos and it's like, oh, this turned out great.
Yeah.
I'm really good at editing. No one else is in the game doing it like this. And now, like, after a year doing, of making these videos and learning to like cut out more, to make transitions, especially transitions is something I learned a lot about, is like the importance of those. Because I used to love just like really choppy shit. Just like, oh, cut. Which is fine. If like in to a certain extent, like especially if you're like focusing, if you're trying to create a work that is, you know, meant to be choppy like that. But if you're trying to make a really clean video, the regular cuts probably won't cut it if that's all you're doing.
Yeah.
So just learning transitions, color grading was a big one, because I used to like do color grading just to make sure that the colors, basically it was just get the whites white, saturate.
Yep. Pretty much.
But now I look back on my old videos, now that I've learned more on how to like properly color grade, it's like, oh my gosh, I really made my videos look like that. Yeah. That is so ugly.
And one thing I've always realized about color grading from like messing with it for so long, or just like color correcting in general, in like video or photo, is the appeal to a blue or like teal to orange contrast. Like if you have a picture that has the color teal, that's like a main subject, and orange, that's a main subject, people are going to be like, oh, it's an amazing photo. Like, how do you do this? I'm annoyed by it at this point.
I'm not going to lie. That's my go-to.
Yeah. I don't blame you.
I'm sorry. I'll stop right now.
No. Keep doing it. It's going to get you your eyes. But like even this, I like the green and the purple because it's different. It's it's appealing. But after like sometimes I did a couple of photos that had like my bike photos had somewhat of a teal to orange on the fun in the dark section, because it was me and Lightning Bikes. I had white lights in the front and then red lights in the back, but I color corrected it to where it's teal in the front and like a brighter red, but you could like argue that it's orange.
Yeah.
But it definitely like draws more eyes, of course. But just like when you realize that, you're like, oh, let me just look at every other photo, like how often that theme
comes
up.
Oh, it's all the time.
It is nuts. But learning how to properly like make it unique in your own way is fascinating, because like a lot of the time you see it like a very harsh, like vibrant or very saturated teal or orange. It's never like a soft or a gentle teal or orange. It's always very like present, like, oh, it's in your face,
yeah,
kind of deal.
And that's kind of what I used to do a lot, was just like I used to go for kind of a, I mean, it made sense for my old studio because it was, you've seen it, it's very dark. It had like all that acoustic bone everywhere. So I did kind of go for like that nighttime. I'm trying to look for another word. There's not really another word. Just like that nighttime feel.
Yeah.
You know, those really harsh dark blues or those dark teals. Yeah. You know, those, and then, you know, I want it to look a little like, there's no, like, I guess tanner. Yeah. Maybe
warmer.
A little warmer.
Yeah.
So I would make sure that, like, the mid-tones were nice and orange. Like, oh, mm-hmm. Look, I'm not that white.
Yeah. And as you like, learn more about color mm-hmm. correcting, you learn that, like, even white balances, you can color correct it to, like, or white balance it to, like, pure white. Or it's white balance, I've learned, is more of like your personal taste. Like,
yeah.
You want it to be more warmer, more colder. It's all up to you. But yeah, there's generally people that are going to be like, why isn't white balance? Why is it like so warm and inside when it's not like the correct white balance? But yeah.
Yeah. With my videos now, I try to be more subtle with it. Sometimes I'll even take off the color grade and just go for a more natural look, because you know, it's with, like, I feel like with the wood background and, like, I've got this nature-y thing going on here, mm-hmm. it's like maybe it should look a little more natural than these harsh colors all up in your face.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's color grading. Just fuck my old color grading. Another thing I used to do is I would turn the exposure way up. So not like so my face was white, but it was like, it's like, damn, I got to turn the brightness down on my computer to watch this properly. I finally learned that you have to, like, skin tone. I finally found, like, skin tones. I looked at the whole graph and it's like, oh, you should really be in, like, if you look... I'm trying to think of a way to explain this to people who don't do this regularly, okay. Which is most people. Yeah. But, like, you know those, like, those LUT graphs or whatever you call it.
Temperature graphs?
Not the temperature, but, like, but like the exposure graphs.
Yeah, okay,
like,
yeah, I get you.
Skin tones should be around, like, it's on a scale of 0 to 100. 100 is, like, pure white. 0
yeah.
is pure black, and skin tone should be around 60 to 70.
Yeah.
I would, before, I would get my skin tones to 90. It's like, it's too bright. And
it's it's a big jump.
And the thing is, like, if you make that a habit, then it looks normal to you.
Yeah.
So,
but the good thing is that it was a habit early on and mm-hmm. you're able to, like, change it.
Oh yeah, absolutely. It's like, yeah, you kind of have to appreciate the mistakes you made before to,
yeah,
like, if just in progress, you mm-hmm. have to, you can't take your work too seriously.
Yeah.
I feel like you could, like, if you give too much thought to, oh, this has to be perfect, it's like, it's never going to be enough for you. Mm-hmm. And you're going to look on your old stuff with disdain, which you probably should.
You should.
To an extent, but you don't have to let that bother you for the rest of your life. Like,
exactly,
oh, this was just this was a stepping stone to get to where I am now.
Yeah. And, like, one thing I've always looked at in, like, cinema or television in general, like, movies are never finished. Like, the editor or the director can always, like, find a little thing that's like, mm-hmm. oh, we should fix that. Movies are never finished. They're always released. So, in general, yeah, that's the same thing for every art. And, like, I've always looked back, and it's super cool to see, like, my progression as well, mm-hmm. like you were saying. Like, why was I taking photos like this? Or, like, oh, I didn't know this camera, like, thing or format before, and now I know.
Mm-hmm.
And I've always realized that, like, from college, I was expecting, like, instant gratification or, like, instant success. Like, I need this now. Like, and then I realized I was able to, like, slow down and, like, okay, life is not a race. People shouldn't expect you to have, like, a full-fledged career at, like, age 21
uh-huh.
or 22. Like, give yourself some time. Work on it. Don't, like sit back and relax. Just, mm-hmm. like, don't rush yourself and, like, fly past, like, life. And, like, once you do that, you can't, like, sit back and, like, appreciate the things you have around you. So,
yeah, that's actually something I started realizing more recently about YouTube, because you know how I did the whole, like, I'm releasing a video every weekday for the next year. And all to my credit, I did keep up with that.
You did. I was surprised. I was like, this is nuts.
it was
especially for, like, the length of your videos. I was like, this man's putting it. Yeah, work right now.
Yeah, I was putting in the work, and it's the reason why I was able to learn so much about editing and learn so much just about YouTube in general. Like, I'm not saying that it was necessarily not worthwhile to do that, but more recently I've realized, like, this is going to take a long time anyway. And yeah, it was starting to get to the point where it was just like, where I was kind of starting to hate editing. It was like, I'm just doing the same thing over and over. It was getting to the point where I wasn't improving as much because, you know, I had this strict release schedule. So I had to do the same thing to make sure I was consistent rather than trying new things.
Yeah.
And so I did make a video explaining like, oh, like the goal is still going to be 5 videos a week, but I'm just not going to worry about it if I release 4 or 3 or even 1.
Yeah.
And that's given me more time to experiment. Like today I just released a video essay.
Video essay, yeah.
Yeah, a very, very niche topic. So I wonder how well it will do, but it was really fun just to try out a new video format because it, like, I've done vlogs, I've done like movie trailers way back when, and of course I've done gaming videos. Yeah. So a video essay was something new and nice to try out, and holy crap, so much respect to the people who make those, because
honestly, yeah, I was challenged, for one of my classes, World Cinema, I had the opportunity to do a video essay. But like other classes, I had to do another like editing project. I had to make a 30-second like trailer in like an hour. I had to like make another full video. Like I had like projects out the wizow, and I was like, I don't want to put a video essay and all that because that's going to take a whole lot of time because you have to script it first. You have to write like a proper essay.
Yep.
And that's not, you're not done. Like you can just write the essay and turn it in, but no. I want to make this into a video. So then you have to read it. And then you have to like, okay, do I want to show my face? Do I want to add any of my own like camera work to it? Or do I just want to use like everything like sourced from the internet? Mm-hmm. And then you have to like animate that in editing and you have to pace it along perfectly with what you're saying. Like, oh my gosh.
Yeah.
I know. Yep.
Yeah. It was like, here's the whole timeline. I had the idea floating around. I brought it up on my last podcast with Owen.
Oh.
When was that? That was like episode 23. Yeah. So that was like,
February.
Dude, you know my podcast releases better than me.
I'm pretty sure it was February. Because I would come back a lot from Rockford to like drive to like Wisconsin or... I would drive to Michigan sometimes and it's like a 3-hour or 5-hour drive sometimes. And I always like a podcast cause you don't want to listen to music all the time.
Yeah.
I was like, at least I got some good podcasts to listen to. So I saw Owen was on. I was like, I'm interested. I'm going to see what Owen's up to. And yeah. But yeah.
So yeah, that I brought it up on that podcast, like, oh yeah, this is an idea I kind of want to bring to fruition. And I think after that, just like over the course of a couple of months, I was just, you know, lightly working on the script on the side. That probably took about a month. And then I waited a week after I got like the whole script done, which took a long time.
Yeah.
Because essays are not easy.
They're not.
I waited a week and then I didn't rewrite the whole thing, but I took my whole thing and just like went through, changed it up phrases, basically rewrote it. just to clean it up a bit, because I feel like if you're in the process of making it, especially if you're like making it over the course of like I was doing like a month, you know, it's not going to be as coherent.
Yeah.
So
generally, fact, do you know the director Taika Waititi?
Heard the name, you would have to remind me of stuff he's worked on.
Jojo Rabbit, Thor Ragnarok.
Oh, yeah.
What he does for his scripts, he writes it, throws it away, comes back to it in a month, writes it again, and then does it backwards or something. Like, he writes it from, like, end... He, like, writes the ending and the beginning, and he, like, writes everything in the middle. Like, it's a crazy process, but it's also, like, the best way to write or like learn a program. Because like for a video, if you get all the footage, you're editing through it, and you're like almost done, Premiere crashes, everything deleted.
Premiere's the worst.
And then you're like, dang, I have to do this all over again. But like the next time you do it, it's like 30% faster and you like learn new things along the way. It's like the best way to learn, but the worst way to like learn at the same time.
Yeah. Dude, you have no idea how like...
how awful Premiere is with crashing?
I know.
There were you do know. It's like you have no idea how many times I've thought about switching over to DaVinci. DaVinci, I've heard is really good. Like even just simple scrolling through that program I hear is way better than Premiere Pro, but I grew up on Premiere.
Yeah.
I can't just give it up and I have all my presets. I can't give those up.
That's a tough one.
Developing the presets over the time was an interesting process. And now that I have a bunch of like transition presets and color grading presets that I can work with, it makes the whole thing easier. But yeah, there were points where I've had points where like Premiere just outright wouldn't work.
Yeah, right?
Yeah, where like, and it would just be like a problem for like a day and then you come back the next day and it's like, oh, you can actually take my footage now?
Yeah, right? It's so bizarre. I remember I had a couple crashes, but like my last video I had to do for my Asian Journeys class, it was like the day before it was due, and all it was the simplest thing ever. I just had videos, and then I had some text on top, and then I had like two sound effects and some a song.
Those two sound effects will break it.
And I was like, I'm not like overworking you, Premiere. It's the lightest thing you've seen this entire year. Render. Oh, it crashed.
No!
And I was like, please have a backup. And then it backed up and I was able to finish it. But like the heartache that you get when that happens, don't get me started.
It got to the point where I was auto saving literally like every 2 minutes. Even that seemed like it wasn't enough sometimes. Yeah. Like even if you give up a minute of editing, it's like, no, all of that is gone and now I have to do it again.
Yeah.
And you know, I try to be stoic about it, like, oh, this is an opportunity for me to do it better. I'm gonna do it the same. I'm gonna get it done quick.
It's an opportunity. It's fine.
It is a very wonky program, but it is like if you look at it big picture, it is kind of it's amazing that you have a program like that at all. Like exactly. How complicated is it to, you know, to take all these files, mesh them together, make it so easy to shorten them, to cut them, to do all these effects. You can zoom in, you can zoom out, and it looks fairly clean.
Yeah.
Like just you can color grade it to like the pixel. So we're blessed to have a program like that at all.
Exactly.
So that like looking at it in that perspective does help me to get through it.
Yeah.
But anyway, this video essay. Mm-hmm. So I rewrote the script and then the worst part is going through footage. Yeah. And this was, I was lucky that I didn't really have to get footage because it was a game. So, and it was games I already played for my channel. So I had all these recordings of it already. So I can just use those, simple enough. But even amongst that footage, even though I didn't have to capture it on its own, like that's like 10 hours of footage at least. For each game, and then for you have to go through, and depending on what you're saying, you have to find like a 5 second bit of it, a specific 5 second bit that fits that sentence.
Yeah.
That was the most time consuming part.
Mm-hmm.
When I started editing, I thought, oh, okay, I can get this done in a week. It's just going through footage, and like, in all fairness, like I knew the games well enough where I could remember like where I should be looking for a specific scene. But it took me a whole extra week, and I was actually working on it up till 1 a.m. last night, and then at that point, it wasn't even done. It was just like, okay, I need to release this tomorrow, but I'm just gonna get up extra early because I was feeling tired. I was like, I might as well, you know, put this off now, and then I can do it better tomorrow morning.
For sure, yeah.
Yeah, sometimes you kind of have to find that balancing act of, oh, should I be pushing myself to really finish this now, or should I just give myself some time and I can do it better later, even if it is a bit more of a crunch.
Yeah, exactly. And it also depends on like your like release date, but you didn't really have like, oh, I need to release this by tomorrow. But yeah, I find myself like if I had a project, I want to give myself the most amount of time to work on it to like, so if I am crunching, I don't have to like stay up late at night. I can just go to sleep or like push it a bit and then wake up early and then be fine and energized and have like a fresh brain. going to it. So yeah. And then one thing I realized is this is different from editing class that I've had in college. Mm-hmm. You are given footage that you have no clue about. I didn't really think about this, but like videos I do, like I'm filming everything. And I'm like, oh, I know what I want to do with this. I'm like, I'm editing through my camera practically.
Yeah.
And then when I get to the editing like station, it's like done in like a couple of hours. I'm like, okay, that was quick. That was easy. But then when you're given like a documentary that I had to do, you have to go through all the all the footage of them talking. You have to go through the transcript and you have no clue. And you have to just figure out how to make a story out of it. And you're like, yo, this takes a lot more time than like I ever thought. You have to go through like 3 hours of just footage that you have no clue what it is. And you have to make a story out of it. I was like, what?
Yeah. And it's hard enough when you're like producing on your own.
Yeah.
Like that's something I've learned to do better too, is while even if I'm just playing a game, I'll be thinking like, oh, this can be the climax. Oh, I can leave a cliffhanger here. Oh, this is like, this can be a really funny moment. I can hone in on this. And like while you're playing, you're kind of producing the video in the back of your head. Like, okay, this is how I can timeline it the future. Yeah. But yeah, I've never had to work on anything yet where it's like stuff I didn't know. Yeah. And that's kind of why I don't want to just be an editor. I want to be the YouTuber myself.
Yeah. And you want to direct, produce, and edit your stuff. Yeah,
exactly. Because I don't want to have to. Like going through my own footage is hard enough even when I know where to go.
Yeah.
I can't imagine going through an hour of someone talking and making a documentary out of that.
Yeah. That was nuts. So it was like in class we had four projects we had to do. We had to do a experimental, which they gave you three documentaries that were like each an hour long, and you just had to make whatever with it. So it was like every kid was just like, oh, make it super art housey and just like make you think about what this documentary connects to this. It was stupid. And then the next one, I think, was the documentary that we had to do. So that was like the hardest thing that we did in that entire class. And we had, I think we had all of spring break to toy around with it. But you get to pick between three documentaries. It was like a rock climbing one. Wait, no, was it four? Yes, it was four. It was a rock climbing documentary, a parkour, a bread baking documentary.
Oh, hell yeah.
It's nice. And then a puppet one. And I picked the puppet one because they said it was pretty hard. It's a good challenge. I was like, I got this. Yeah. Easy. It was easy.
Easy.
The thing that you had to do was you had to read the transcript, highlight what you wanted to be picked or like be said in the documentary. Then if the questions were asked like, oh, what do you do as a puppet? And then maybe 30 minutes later in the conversation, they asked like, oh, how do people react with the puppets? And you're like, oh, maybe these two sections make more sense together.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to figure out like how to tell a story through the documentary. Like, oh, what he said at like 5 minutes makes sense with what he said at 45 minutes. So now I'm going to like switch those clips and have them play together. You have to find the footage that like matches that. And it's like hours of just like random B-roll that happens. And then you have to go through the entire documentary and then you have to subclip it according to the transcript and they have to put it in the bin. It's just nuts.
Yeah.
it took a lot of time and a lot of planning. I probably spent a good amount of like 18 hours on that project, like in general.
Yeah.
But it was like any time I had, I was like, okay, I'm going to sit down and work on this documentary. The thing about it, I was really excited about this documentary. I was like,
yeah,
let me, I have like 5 minutes right now. I can't wait to get onto this documentary. And luckily, I didn't have Premiere crash on me the entire time. I was like, thank God that Premiere was like, on it, like had a good mood.
Yeah.
Through that.
It really is just mood sometimes. Yeah. It feels like. It
has like mood swings or whatever. And I'm like, come on, Premiere. So yeah, it was a good project, but I was expecting that to be my final. I'm glad it wasn't my final because then on like documentary on top of other projects would have been like absolutely insane. So that was good. It was like in the middle. It was like a midterm kind of deal.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's something, from the outside, I don't feel like people really see is even in like a short video, you take a 3-minute video, look at how many cuts it has.
Yeah.
It might not just really be a 3-minute video. It might be a 10-hour video condensed into a 3-minute video. Exactly.
Have you seen the newest movie, Everything Everywhere All at Once?
I have not. It sounds fast-paced.
It is. I'm just like thinking about like 3 minutes cutting. If you take 3 minutes out of any of that movie, it's like at least like 200 cuts. Like it's insane. Yeah. Like how like insane and
it's just so frantic.
It like
so
stimulates your brain to a new like situation. You're like, I didn't know I could like perceive so much information at so much time.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's something that I actually recognized about Mr. Beast. Have you seen any of his videos?
Yeah.
Just like how quickly paced they are, mm-hmm. and how you're still able to ingest all this information. I tried to kind of take from that and make my the pace of my videos a little faster. I have a couple like faster paced videos, but mm-hmm. I kind of realized that I don't really like that for myself.
Yeah.
Like,
do you?
I don't know. Maybe it's not good for the YouTube algorithm.
Possibly.
But like, I prefer something not like super slow, but just bring it back a little bit. If you're doing all these cuts, like, I'm not one of these young, fresh kiddos with the attention span of a goldfish.
Yeah.
I do actually like to take 5 seconds to look at something instead of two.
Yeah. I like, he was on the Joe Rogan podcast, and I watched a couple of clips of that, and he was like obsessive around YouTube in general, how it worked. He had like a couple buddies that would spend. Have you seen?
I saw that.
Yeah. Like he would watch videos and like count how many cuts were in each video. I'm like, what? Uh-huh. I've never done that with anything before. But like that kind of detailed oriented like mindset that he had was insane.
Yeah. I found that to be really inspiring for my work because I mean, back to that whole like 5 videos a week thing. Like, I was obviously just kind of getting out videos, whether I had like perfected them or not. Mm-hmm. You know, like I wouldn't say that they were necessarily bad videos, but I do look back on them now. Like, oh, I could have done more with this,
possibly,
and I could have made it way better. So I tried to translate that into my own work. Like, okay, I can take more time with this. Maybe like I shouldn't be super lenient on the schedule because mm-hmm. I do need a release schedule, but I can take more time to make this transition a little better. Maybe make this a little more coherent. Maybe go through the footage and maybe this part doesn't necessarily play as big of a role as I initially thought, so I can cut that out and I'm missing a whole minute, but it's actually better because freaking 5-year-olds on YouTube love that shit.
I control the platform.
Yeah. But it's like editors have a hard job. Editors have a very hard job, and they don't get like any of the credit for the work.
They don't. Yeah. It's also like even like CGI or like visual effects artists in general, like also
that shit I can't even get into.
It's nuts. Like it's such like a new form of art that a lot of people, even productions, are like they're slowly getting to it, but a lot of productions didn't know how to properly prepare for visual effects. Like, oh, we want visual effects in this video or this movie or TV series. But that's just going to be a problem for later. So like when they're on set, they don't know how to properly like give the information to the visual effects artists, like lighting, textures, and like the setup, or like even like working with the cinematographer. Because if you don't know exactly what you're going to be given, the visual effects artist is going to have the hardest time of his life trying to put together like a messy like mishmash of just components and like assets, then it's not going to give you anything like good. But if like they communicate it works a lot better. So like even in that facet, like anyone that works in post are just like the butt of like the industry in general. Everyone's just like, yeah, here's all of our work, fix it for us, and we'll earn the money from it. So
dude, that's why I don't want to be an editor for anyone else. Like, it's like, I could probably be if I really put my mind to it, I could probably be a really good editor for a bigger YouTuber, but I have to admit, I'm a bit selfish in that. I want the glory. I'm putting in the work. You get to see this face. This is the face you get.
This is the editor right here.
I'm the editor. I am the producer. I am the face of everything you see.
Respect me, yeah.
And down the line, I'm going to hire a different editor, and you're not going to see his face. You're still going to see mine.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm playing. I want to have a good editor, and I want to give him tons of credit.
Yeah. Or her.
Or her.
Editor, girl, yeah. Editor.
Or they.
They're probably not. Yeah, exactly. Probably not as good, but.
Bro.
I've been watching too much Dave Chappelle.
There's this other YouTuber called Sneeko.
Real quick, I just need to disclaim, women and men and whatever you identify as, all of you can edit equally.
It Agreed.
Was a joke.
Agreed.
All right, that's all I want. I just wanted to cover my ass real quick.
Do you know this YouTuber called Sneeko?
I do not.
I saw a video essay on Sneeko, and he's like a mid-range YouTuber. He just hit 1 million. But I've known him since he was like 20.
It's weird how 1 million is mid-range now.
It is, right? And he's in New York, but a lot of people say that he's like the Kanye of YouTube. You know, like how Kanye is like has like this bizarre sort of like mindset on life in general. Sneeko's the sort of the same way. He has this really cool video format. It's called 1 minute podcast. So he goes to like a Subway, sets up a table that says 1 minute podcast on it, and just strangers walk up and he asks like a super controversial question. Like, are we equal? Should women be paid more? Like, it's questions that put people on the spot that they don't know how to like answer. And it's the best way to like understand the people around. And he like ingests that information and like creates such like a prominent opinion for himself. And his videos are like what he wants to say, whatever he wants to say. And they're like, nothing is like blocking him from saying whatever he says. Mm-hmm. And he says that like his videos are well composed as well. Like he gets his message across, and he's really like outspoken and like passionate about like what he says. But that's like a Dave Chappelle as well. Like I would put him in like that same category. I recommend looking up Sneeko.
Sneeko. Yeah. So you're basically saying like, even though he does have this, like, I guess you could say controversial content, he does put it out in a way that is, like, coherent and, like, clear in its intention.
Because, like, for me, I want to ask a lot of questions, but at the same time, I feel like if I ask questions, I'm going to be, like, I'm not going to get the answer, or someone's going to say, oh, you shouldn't be asking this question. Figure it out for yourself.
Uh-huh.
I'm coming to you so I can figure this out.
Yeah.
But Sneeko's like, he asks the questions that people are afraid to ask. And it's a good way for people to like, that are trying to understand like the things that are changing. Mm-hmm. It's a good way to understand like a perspective that's like similar to yours. So if you're like someone that wants to know more from like a non-bias, well, no, he is biased.
Yeah, I think to an extent everyone has a bias,
but like a true, like he doesn't like lie.
Yeah,
he's like
that's the best thing is when you do have a bias, but you're at least honest about it, so that we can communicate in this like in this way that will actually help us understand each other. Because if you're just lying through your teeth, or just like pushing down this opinion or this idea that you might have, even because it might offend someone, like that's not doing anyone justice. It's not doing you justice, because you're not gonna be able to, like, if that idea just sits there and sits stagnant and doesn't go anywhere, then it's obviously not gonna change. You're still gonna hold on to that, and you're not gonna be able to grow.
Exactly.
I think it's like just honesty in general is super important. I know that's something that I've been kind of wishy-washy with, is like, because I don't think, like, I know my intent is good.
Yeah.
But I do know that, you know, I wouldn't say I lean moderate on the political spectrum. I'm not going to try to get into politics or anything. I'm just saying, like, I would define myself as socially liberal, fiscally conservative. So,
yeah.
I mean,
same.
I would say. Just, and, you know, if you take any side, there's going to be other people who are mad at you. That's exactly. just how it is. Mm-hmm. So I've been thinking to myself, all right, there's not really a better way of saying it, but just like how honest, how outspoken should I be about my own views? Should I even be putting them out there? And yeah. I realized like, if my intent is good, I shouldn't have to worry. Mm-hmm. Like if I am being self-aware and like genuinely working towards bettering my opinions, then I need to put these opinions out there so that people could potentially call me out on my shit.
Yeah.
Sometimes that can take a back turn with like cancel culture, which annoys me so much.
Yeah.
But yeah, you really need to be able to put your ideas out there in an honest way mm-hmm. so that you can grow from them yourself.
Yeah. And yeah, that's perfectly said. I'm in the same situation. I like my intent is good, but sometimes I've seen reactions from other people that didn't like receive that like positive uh-huh. intention. I'm like, oh, I'm sorry. I don't know. What did I do wrong? How can I fix this? Like I wanted to improve. And I, uh-huh. my self-conscious didn't catch that like from you. Like my like social like awareness didn't like understand that you were hurt by what I was like projecting on you. So I just want to mm-hmm. like, that's the thing I like about Sneeko, because he just like, he wants to figure out how to improve.
Yeah. Yeah. I want to, this might be the perfect time to bring it up, but I remember during streaming one day, I noticed that I did have like a lot of trans people watching. And I first of all, I should preface this with, I don't have any issue with trans people.
Yeah.
Like you should be able to be whatever you want. It's just my, like, I guess my attitude was that I didn't have an attitude. Mm. It was like I didn't have a negative opinion of them or anything. It was just kind of something that I didn't really think about. I didn't really necessarily care about. And I listen to a lot of Dave Chappelle and a lot of comedians yeah. who like they're not against the community either, but they do dunk on him a little bit, which just, I do think you should be able to do with anything but I think the point I'm trying to get to is one of the people who were watching, like there was a whole debate in my chat. Like, I'm not going to get into it, mm-hmm. but it was just, I remember one of these things that one of the people watching, they said, I was just like, yeah, I don't really understand the whole trans community, the whole trans thing. And they just went, it's okay not to understand. Hmm. And I was just like, oh, that is such a weight off my chest.
Yeah.
Like, because it was just like, before it was just like, oh, this should just be something I should stay out of completely. Like, I should probably, I should just not.
Yeah.
Nope. Just not touch that at all. But, like, just because, like, even with all the, with all the questions I had, it's like, my mindset was just like, just don't understand it and it won't be a problem.
Yeah.
And it's just like, it's okay not to understand.
That's good.
Like, it's okay to ask those questions. It's okay to be like try to understand it and realize that you probably won't understand it
mm-hmm.
even after all your questions, and that's okay.
Huh. That's a good way to put it.
With that said, I need to pee, so I think that's where we're gonna end the podcast.
Okay.
We've been going for a while. 139
yo
is what we're at.
Hope you guys podcast. Love this nerdy talk.
Yeah. How steamy are you right now?
You want to take off shirts for this last part?
For the last minute. Woo! Dude, I don't think it was this must have been before the podcast started, but like it's 90 degrees out.
Ugh.
I don't have AC running in here because I can't let the microphones pick it up. But
full power.
Aiden Tech, it's beautiful seeing you again after all of this time.
You too,
dude. I'm planning. I don't know if this will be an actual thing. We'll see how it works out. But I want to do some podcasts where it's just like where it's outside. We got like a fire going.
Yeah,
and it's just like. A bunch of people. I'm talking 4, maybe even 5. We can pass some mics around. And I would love to have you as a part of that.
I would love to see it. Yeah.
Yeah. And
we'll have to happen soon because I leave June 5th to August 13th for camp. So,
oh, I forget you have that. Okay. Well,
Or in August.
Or in August. Okay. All right. We'll figure it out when we figure it out. Thanks for reminding me of that. Forget that you do that.
Yeah.
Are you doing photos for them again?
I'm going to be a counselor. So I'm just going to be like babysitting kids. Yeah.
Don't got to worry about all the pictures.
Yeah.
That's incredible. Well, thank you so much for being on, Aiden. It was
a great
pleasure. Of course. Anytime, man. And thank you for listening or watching if you're watching. We got a video on both Spotify and YouTube now. How crazy
what?
Is that?
What? Nice.
On Spotify too? What? That's a listening platform. What? Now you can make it a seeing platform.
Whoa. Whoa.
Updates.
Bye, everybody.
See ya.